available to go to that. So we generally try to finish by then, but for sure we will try to finish by then today in order to make that a possibility for anyone for whom it is otherwise a possibility, and certainly encouraged. Okay, so what we'll try to do today, it could be that the Asia may end up taking a little longer than we thought. That was originally a Devar Shein and Miskaven, but I guess it was inevitable that it would lead to a little bit longer. Some of the fascinating avenues and twists and turns that this topic takes and maybe deserve a little more attention than we originally allotted. So we'll see how much we're able to cover today and tomorrow, and then we presumably will have at least some left over for Sunday, and then we'll start Chazara whenever we finish this, which will be sometime in that neighborhood. But today, the main thing, hopefully we'll do a little bit more than this also, but the main thing I wanted to get involved with was the topic that we left off with yesterday. The suggestion, which gets us into the Rashba Ran Machlokas, but that Machlokas is much broader, about do we define Psik Resha as applying if it's possible to do this action without the Malacha in general? And that emerged from our general question of how do we understand Psik Resha? And the idea that, according to, let's say, Rav Shimon, if I do one action and it brings about another action, Rav Shimon would normally say, I'm Pater or Mutter. But if they're definitely going to be linked, if they're definitely going to happen, one's going to lead to the other, Psik Resha, you're Chayav. So we had discussed, how does that work? What is it about the Psik Resha, about this definite causality that shifts Rav Shimon's view? And we saw that, broadly speaking, there are two ways of seeing it. It could be more, it could be some subdivisions, but essentially two ways of seeing it. Either that Psik Resha provides the Kavana, that the whole tour here has to do on some level with lack of Kavana, and once it's Psik Resha, that supplies the Kavana. As we said, we drew examples from various areas of life where little children or defendants or others will have a hard time denying responsibility for something if it is foreseeable and inevitable. So perhaps that's what's going on here. You can't say you didn't mean it if it was definitely necessarily going to happen. That was one way of seeing things. Alternatively, there was a whole different way, which really has very different implications. That it's not so much about your kavana being supplied by this inevitability, but it's more about the fact that if two actions are naturally linked, then we have to consider them to be one action. And that anything in the world, one can subdivide into many smaller parts, and you could deny responsibility for anything. You could say, well, I only did the first step, I didn't do everything else. A few people asked me this morning, which is a relevant example to use, you fire a gun, so there's all kinds of different processes that are happening in terms of the trigger and the hammer and the fire and the explosions and the sending off of the bullet. So one could say, well, I only pulled the trigger, I didn't mean to shoot the gun. And so clearly when there is inherently linked processes, so then we have to say it's all one thing. Nobody can have any credibility in a court and say, oh, I didn't shoot anybody, I just pulled the trigger. The gun shot him. You know, as much as the NRA will say the opposite, right? Guns don't kill people, people kill people. So here you try to use the reverse defense. Oh, I didn't kill anybody, the gun killed him, right? I only pulled the trigger and the gun shot him. So clearly that's nonsensical. There is a direct connection, and that's all considered to be one action. Although this example of the gun may be very useful in trying to explain some of the points, and we'll probably come back to it. So here it's useful as well. So clearly we see that all as one action, regardless of how many processes are going on there, and they're inherently linked. So if that's what's going on with the Psik Resha, so then that really opens up different avenues and possible different questions in terms of how to understand it. And one of the major questions that we're trying to look at now is, should we focus on what's happening right now in front of you? Or are we looking at this question generally? So is the issue that right now what I'm going to do is going to bring about a malacha, definitely, and therefore I'm liable for that. Liable used broadly, whether it means you shouldn't do it or you're actually chayiv. Use that as a broad term. So is it that because right now I will definitely cause a malacha, I can't deny responsibility? Or is it a broader connection that these two actions are always linked, and therefore they're always considered to be one? And if that's not an absolute statement, there's some lack of perfect connection, even if I will directly cause a malacha right now, that doesn't necessarily make it into a psik ratio. That's a huge difference. So for example, we mentioned Shitas Rashi. And there are different ways to read Rashi, which is itself related to this question that we're asking here. Rashi and Zvachim and Daf Tzadi Aleph, Rashi talks about this question. We started this a little bit yesterday. Rashi talks about this question. How can we bring together the problem of being able to sprinkle wine on the Mizbeach while avoiding the Isser of extinguishing the flames? So Rashi says that maybe it's not a psik ratio because, as the Gemara suggests, you can use smaller drops. So Rashi has this very powerful statement that since you can use smaller drops, and then it will not be a psik ratio, it's not necessarily going to extinguish the flames. So even if you use bigger drops, it's still not a psik ratio. So that sounds a very shocking statement in itself. It sounds like even if I'm going to do something right now and I know that in this local situation it's going to bring a malacha, because it's not always inherently linked, that's not a psik ratio. So if that's what he means, that's really taking aside perhaps in our two positions as to what psik ratio means. That it's not about supplying your kavana here, it's about saying that the activities are generally linked. Hi.
So what would be a case where it is integrally linked?
What would be a case where it is integrally linked?
Yes.
A case where an action always leads to a malacha. So let's say, for example, if you want to use the same example, let's say there's no such concept as small drops. Let's say any amount of contact between the wine and the fire always results in extinguishing it.
That's so, true.
Right, but you can make up an example where it is true. Or let's say when you cut the head off a chicken. So pretty much it'll always die under most normal circumstances. Then we can get into the interesting discussion we'll try to get into today. Does 100% really mean 100%? Or does 99.9%? You know, that's why I said the gun could be a useful example, because the gun also could theoretically misfire. You know, what is the psik ratio? There could be something that could go wrong in the process. So when are we willing to say a possibility is too remote? You know, that's part of the question, really. So all of this factors in. So it's interesting to say that Rashi says this pshat, because it's difficult, it's not so easily consistent with other Rashis. And first of all, we saw that Rashi in Sukkah yesterday explicitly says the kavanah pshat. Right, so I would think that if kavanah is the issue, all we're interested in right now is your knowledge that this will definitely bring about a malacha. So it would be hard to associate Rashi with both views. So that itself is a challenge. And some of the Svarim talk about that Rashi and Tzvachim. Evan Ezel, for example, in Halchas Maaseh Karbanos has a discussion of how exactly is that Rashi so well reconciled with other views of Rashi. Especially also because making the kavanah point and this point work together is not such an obvious shift.
Similarly, Rashi on the Shako Barzeh,
yes,
he says it's only when you're cutting off a small piece of skin which isn't going to be useful, right, and that's when it's okay. So why can Rashi just easily say, well, since sometimes you can cut off the skin, it's not useful, so you just take it off like normal over here?
But I think that Gemara is also a little bit ambiguous. I think that Gemara could be read both ways also, that you're doing that or you could be doing that. You could be doing the stripping, or you are doing the stripping. It's a little bit ambiguous in the Gemara, so it might be open to both readings also. Now, in that same spirit, this Rashi and Zvachim, there are those who raise the possibility that maybe Rashi doesn't mean that you're using big drops now and you will definitely extinguish it. Maybe Rashi means that you're still using small drops and you're still not going to extinguish it. But maybe I have to worry that small drops easily grow into big drops, and the potential that this could likely extinguish the flames is very great. So maybe I have to worry about a slippery slope into a psychoracious situation. So Rashi's saying that no, since there is a scenario where it's not going to definitely happen, then even if it turns out that you are making bigger drops, it's not going to necessarily be a psychoration. But that is a less intuitive reading of Rashi. It works less well with his words.
Isn't that what you were just describing, the Darshan with Kavin?
Right, so it seems like that would normally be a Dabar Shem Miskavim. So he's like adding a step here that maybe it's not even a Dabar Shem Miskavim because of the possibility of not only that it's not going to necessarily extinguish, but that you could also use smaller drops, which would guarantee it more, but maybe those smaller drops might turn into bigger drops, so then maybe that's something to worry about. So it just kind of adds a step into the picture. But it's harder to make that make sense. So the more intuitive reading of Rashi is the way he says it, which seems to leave open somewhat of a question. So this also raises another issue, which Daniel raised during the Seder, that if one doesn't want to say the all one mice of Shat, but one wants to say the Kavan of Shat, which as we saw is what Rashi says elsewhere, so one would think this Svara shouldn't make it better, should make it worse. That if there's a way of doing it without doing the Malacha, and in this case, you're doing it with doing the malacha. Right? Maybe we should say, if anything, that gives even more kavod, because you could have gotten out of it, and you chose the malacha way. So if anything, that should put it more on your plate. So in theory, you don't have to phrase it like that. Right? We could phrase it like the way the Rashba does, we'll get into in a second, where in your local case, you don't really have a choice. Right, the Rashba's case, which we're about to talk about a little bit more, where you close your house and you lock a deer that happens to be in the house. So you don't really have a choice, because the deer is in your house right now, and you're stuck with that situation. So it's not that you opted for the malacha, it's just that in other circumstances there wouldn't necessarily be a malacha. But in Rashi's specific example, with the wine, you are more in control. You could have chosen to use smaller drops. So one would think that in order to excuse you in that case, you really have to have a broader conception of how they're linked, which is quite a chiddush, maybe even more of a chiddush than the Rashba. And also a challenge in terms of Rashi's other phrasing of the focus on Kavana. Sammy?
Couldn't it be that by across the yain you have to do a certain shear?
But clearly he talks about you can do it in a smaller amount while you're doing it.
No, I mean, he's talking about Lagabe. To be extinguishing the fire, meaning obsecration, so extinguishing the fire with sprinkling of wine. That's not necessarily, one equals one. Rather, since you could technically sprinkle wine on fire and it will not extinguish, but here, since you have to do...
I hear the point. You're saying that the action by itself doesn't have to lead to kibui, but the mitzvah requires kibui. I don't think that's actually the case, though. Right, so in practice, it's an interesting. If it were true,
that would fit exactly with the Rashba.
Right, if it were true, that'd be an interesting point. Right, this circumstance, the mitzvah requires you to do that, so then it would match better. Although it doesn't, I don't think it matches up with the facts, but it's an interesting potential svara. So that gets us into the Rashba. And the Rashba, as you can imagine, is a huge discussion, and this is what we started to bring up yesterday. By the way, before saying the Rashba, the Merkavas HaMishnah also understands, we started to say this yesterday, but we didn't say this part of it, the Merkavas HaMishnah thinks this is the view of the Rambam as well. And we mentioned that the Merkavas HaMishnah commented on the Gemara on Daf Kuf Gimel, that the Gemara that talks about somebody who's plucking endives out of his field, the Gemara we've come back to time and time again. So that Gemara raises the question that why is that malacha of, let's say, Tolesh, or Kotze, whatever it is, why is that not also Choresh? Because you are enhancing the ground that you are plucking. And the Gemara suggests, well, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not Psikresha, because the Ka'avid Ba'ara Dechavre. You're working in somebody else's field. So apparently it's not necessarily Nichole. And yesterday we talked a little bit about the question about the Hashkafic challenge from that Gemara. That what happens to be a house L'Reicha Kamocha? Why are you not happy about it? Because it's your neighbor's field? That's not something that's beneficial to you? So we mentioned yesterday the Merkavas HaMishnah's explanation of how, no, the point of saying that it's your neighbor's field means that it's not necessarily a decision that's net benefit. That if one person is in control of everything, one person is doing the plucking, and is benefiting from the advantage to the field, so then you can figure out that he's intending for all of these actions. But if one person is doing the plucking and somebody else is potentially getting the choresh benefit, so then the person plucking is not necessarily cheshbening the benefit to the field itself, and therefore we can't necessarily count that on his cheshbon. It's all about what is, we mentioned this in the context of the self-evident, anansadi word, that this shows that there is an objective benefit. But what the Mechanics Commissioner goes on to say is that he thinks that the Rambam says this pshat that we're saying in terms of Rashi and possibly the Rashba. Because the Rambam quotes this din, but doesn't explain, doesn't quote this possibility of Arad the Chavre, that somebody else's field. So the Mechanics Commissioner says, the Gemara, according to the Rambam, the Gemara is not saying that it has to be somebody else's field in order for it to be Lo Nichle. Saying that since it could be somebody else's field, so therefore there's not a necessary connection between the two, and therefore that's why it's not a psikresha de nichle. So the Rambam doesn't have to bring the Gemara's explanation. It's not an actual requirement in did. It's an explanation of why it's not a psikresha, and therefore whether or not it's actually true in the case you're talking about, the Rambam is not worried about it. Sam looks troubled by that.
Didn't you make up any case that there's always a possibility of having it, that it's a psikresha in a place where it wouldn't necessarily be able to determine that it's nichle because it's somebody else's?
No, if it's...
Like, I'm saying, like, you know, opening up your, you know, the fridge door. Okay, so, you know, it could have been in somebody else's fridge, and that wouldn't necessarily... Mm-hmm.
No, not at all. That's a good example of why that's not true. Because the light that comes out from the fridge doesn't only benefit the owner, it benefits whoever's standing there. So therefore, it's not always going to be dependent on ownership. It's only a malacha like enhancing the object itself, which accrues only to the owner. But the example you're giving specifically illustrates why that's not necessarily the case, because the example is coming on the light. So the light will come directly to the person who's involved in action A, will benefit from the result of action B. It happens to be this example in the Gemara about enhancing a field that's only relevant to somebody who owns the field. So not every example is going to be tied into ownership and can be easily switched to somebody else.
So every example where it's not the benefit of the second action isn't tied into somebody else, but it benefits the person doing the action, so then that would be awesome.
That would lead a lot of cases. You know, that still leaves a good amount of territory open. Okay, so that's how the Kevus Mishnah understands the Rambam, and that's what Rashi seems to be saying, and this has been associated strongly with the view of the Rashba. So just to review, what did the Rashba say? What did the Ran say? And what did the Shulta Gibarim say? So essentially, the Rashba bases himself on Yerushalmi, which the Ran disputes his reading of. Now, the Rashba says, let's say you have a scenario where you want to go to Shul Shabbos morning, but you have a deer in your house. Okay. D-E-E-R, not D-E-A-R, it's not talking about your family, it's talking about an animal that happens to have wandered into your house. And you want to lock your door so that your house doesn't get robbed. But in doing so, you will also lock the deer into your house, which will apparently be a malacha of tzad, of tzedah. So the question is, are you allowed to do that? So the Rashba says a very sweeping leniency. He says you're allowed to do this, even if you're also interested in keeping the deer. Even though you want to do tzad at the same time. But since it's indirect, and it is also provoking a maisa heter, locking the house has no malacha involved with it, in pre-electronic times. So therefore, that makes it mutter to do both. Mutter to do this even with kavana to chop the deer. And the Ran is at the complete opposite end of the spectrum. The Ran says, it's not mutter to do this, even if you're not intending towards the deer. Because it comes out to a psikresha. And therefore, the Ran disagrees completely with the Rashba. And he says, any implication in the Yerushalmi that it's mutter, that's because the Gemara also combines it with the And the most it can mean for here is that after you've already caught the deer, you don't necessarily have to set him free. It's mutter to keep the deer. But to say, l'chadchila, you're allowed to close the door, lock the door in such a situation, the Ran says, chas v'shalom, it's not true. So two major points of difference between him and the Rashba, that you're not allowed to do it, even if you don't want to keep the deer. And the Rashba says you're allowed to do it even if you do. So the Shulta Gibarim has that compromise, sort of, or the Shulta Gibarim basically says, I'm interested in something else, and the Rashba supports me and I don't need the whole Rashba. So essentially it comes out that he's saying a compromise. Because the Shulta Gibarim says what he thinks is true, is that if there's a possibility of doing the action without the Malacha, what we've been associating with Rashi and the Rambam and the Kedus and Mishnah, so then that's not stipulation. And he thinks that's less of a chiddush than the Rashba, so the Rashba supports him. So essentially his compromised view is that if you are closing the door, you're allowed to lock the door l'chatchila, even though it's going to trap the tzvi, as long as, at least if that's not your kavanah. The Rashba goes further and says if that's your kavanah also, he still allows it. The Shulta Gibarim allows it at least without that kavanah. So essentially you have three positions. The Rashba, you're allowed to lock the door even with kavanah for the deer. The Shulta Gibarim, who at least is willing to say you can lock the door if you don't have kavanah for the deer. And the Rav says you can't lock the door to begin. And this is a major issue of halacha. There are many, we'll talk a little bit more later about some of the practical halachic ramifications. Rav Shechter has said in the past that he thinks the Shulta Gibarim's compromise is a popular view. We'll talk a little bit about some of the literature about this. To give an example about something we spoke about in the past, about how this discussion is invoked. So when we talked about Zareya, so we talked about the question that some of the contemporary poskim ask, that if anything that enhances growth is considered to be Zareya, so can I open the windows in my house if I have plants growing inside my house? So won't that contribute, the sunlight will contribute to the growing of the plants, am I allowed to do that? And you have different shittas about this. We saw some of the different views about this question, which, assuming there are no differences, and we'll get into this a little bit now, loosely speaking, has been attached to the story. So for example, there were those who would say, a Rashba view would be, that yes, you can open the window, because you want sunlight for yourself and for your plant. So therefore, since you have both in mind, you're allowed to do it. The Ran would say, according to this broad parallel, you're not allowed to open the window, even if you're just interested in your own sunlight, because of the effect it will have on the plant. And there are many on this Shiloh who follow a Shulta Gibarim kind of view, who say that if your intent is for your own sunlight, then you can open it up, even though that's also going to have an effect on the plant. So that's an example of a halachic issue that we discussed already in the past, which is brought into parallel with this debate, the Rashba, the Rav, and the Shulta Gibarim. So there is a lot of discussion about what exactly this Rashba is getting at. And I'd like to throw this out to the floor for a few minutes. There are a number of different theories about the Rashba, and I'd like to hear what you might have to suggest about this. So why is the Rashba really describing anything different than a normal Davar She'enu Miskaven? Any Davar She'enu Miskaven, a person is trying to do something that is mutter, and it brings about something that is a malach. So what's the difference? The guy wants to lock his house, and it brings about the malacha of tzad. Why is Rashba saying, in this case, no, you want to do something mutter, snap sikration. What is the Rashba getting at? And to start the ball rolling, there are those who say that, like we've said so far, the Rashba is saying that this is not an automatic relationship. This is a relationship which sometimes isn't there. And therefore, in this case, it's also not a sikration. The approach we've been mentioning until now. This is the approach that Shulta Gibarim seems to be reading in the Rashba, because he sees him as support for this. The Yeshuas Yaakov says this also. The Oneg Yontif has a tshuva in which he also makes this assertion. But that's what's animating the Rashba. That the Rashba is saying this because there isn't this automatic linkage between closing your door and trapping a deer. And again, in relation to what we said before, that about Daniel's point, it's not even gratuitous either in this case. We have no reason to ascribe to you extra kavanah because you don't have a choice. This is the situation that you are confronted with. there are those who have an understanding here which would really limit the Rashba's application. Some understand that this is really unique to Tzeda. In the Sefer Chekir Halacha, he says something along those lines. Chekir Halacha. The Evan HaEzel has a statement along these lines as well, that they suggest that maybe this is really just a Tzeda idea. That Tzeda has a unique relationship to other types of components, because it's a malacha which by its very nature doesn't really have an action, is more about the result of an action. Most other malachos have a specific surah, while seva is really about the goal of capturing an animal, and you could do that all kinds of different ways. So in order for locking your door to be considered an act of seva, it could be considered as much an act of seva as any other action, but maybe it needs specifically kavana in order for that to be the case, which is not necessarily exportable to other malachas. We don't necessarily say this will be true in the example we said a minute ago of Adzriya, or in any other case, maybe it's specifically a Tzeda idea. And this, by the way, draws on what we talked about last week about Zomer v'Tzarech La'Eitim. There are some who invoke the Magid Mishnah that we mentioned about Tikkun Kli. Right? The Magid Mishnah says that Tikkun Kli needs more kavana than other malachos, because in order for it to be considered a Kli, you have to care about it as a Kli. So too, in order for something to be an act of Tzeda, you have to want it to be an act of Tzeda, and therefore it's a unique kind of malacha. And the Evan Hazel compares this to Domer B'Sarach Leitzin, that Tosfos that says that it's only Ksira because you want the wood, you want it to be Ksira. Tzeda has that kind of quality to it as well, and therefore maybe the Rashba is possibly correct, but very local and can't be used for anything else. Right, he does have kavana for tzeda, but also the kavana heter is what helps it. If he had kavana only for tzeda, then you'd be in trouble. But he's saying it's a chiddush on top of that, but it's built on the quirk of tzeda.
But why should another kavana prevent that being?
So that kavana apparently knocks it out, as we've seen with Moshe and Shulchan Aruch or other things.
Yeah, but meaning while saying Tzuch Maguf is a different meaning, it's not that you're having kavanah for both, you're having kavanah for something else.
Right, but Melach and Tzuch Maguf, we saw that if there was blank kavanah, then the Melach kavanah could have filled it in.
Correct.
Right, so here it's your kavanah for something else that stops the default. So here, you're right, it's a bigger chiddush, but the presence of something else could still knock it out. So either way, it's still a chiddush to say that, but his chiddush is perhaps, and maybe the Shulchan Gibarim all the more so, who says you don't have kavanah for tzeda, so maybe it works even better for him, is working off the assumption that tzeda is unique. So if you're going to say that, then that's going to very much limit what the scope of the Rashba is. We won't be able to invoke him in terms of other malachas. It's interesting, and we'll probably won't get this much today, but tzeda has a large role in a lot of the Pesik Reishu discussion, so it's itself something that's interesting. But that's how some suggest that it has to do with an automatic linkage between the malacha and what you're doing, which is not the case here, and Seda maybe has a unique relationship to that. Are there any other approaches anybody wants to suggest? What else might be making this scenario unique that the Rashba would say his view and differentiate it from a normal Dabar Shenu Miskavim?
You could say that Shmiras Avais is different than other things that we're going to allow for, you know, something that's a little bit, you know, funky. There's a gray show over here because we don't want people to have sin group or something.
Oh, okay. So it's interesting. There is a scar like that, but it's not exactly coming from the same place. So Sammy is suggesting, listen, we can't tell you to leave your house open to Ganavim just because of this. So maybe Hefshe Meruba is at play. So there is a svara like that, but it's not formed the same way. And I think the reason it's not formed the same way is because to say it's Hefshe Meruba, so first of all, Ikar Chasam and Asefer, he doesn't base it on that. Unless you want to say that the Yerushalmi is linking it to a Pikuach Nefesh case, and therefore it is kind of along the point. But which is an intriguing possibility, but it sounds like Ikar Chasam and Asefer, that we don't really have that element here. And it would be important to invoke because it would certainly affect the application of the halacha. Also, Hefshe Meruba is really helpful only for drabanans, so we have to assume that we're dealing with a drabanan and saying that you'd have to maintain that Shimon, for example, holds a malacha b'psik reisha of the Rabbanan, which is a difficult position to say. Some would say it, but it's certainly hard to say that across the board. The similar idea that you do find is expressed by the Chemda Shlomo, and perhaps more similar to what you're saying by the Chassam Sofer in his Chidushim to the Sukkah, where they suggest that it's not so much that we're allowing it because they have some meruba, but here you have two actions. You have the action of protecting your house and the action of profiting a deer here, like picking up the free, holding on to the free deer that showed up in your house. So those two actions are competing for prominence, right? One of these actions is hugely necessary. It's clear, if I were to ask somebody, what would you rather, leave your house exposed to, leave everything in your house exposed to an oven, or get a free deer? So clearly someone would say, it's a much bigger priority to protect my house. So the fact that human realities make it so overwhelmingly necessary to lock your door, that makes it clearly the prominent intent here. So you see the subtle difference in what you're saying. It's not that we're, it's auster, but we're allowing it because of the Hesed Ruv. We're saying the fact that that's the clear, overwhelming motivation because of the potential loss, so we'll allow that to dominate the picture. We'll allow to say that while you're locking the door, you're locking the door because the alternative is leaving your house completely exposed. So that's enough to overwhelm everything else and to dominate your action. And the fact that you're also picking up a free deer while you're doing it, that can be considered to be completely secondary at best. Right? Ready for the first?
So that wouldn't necessarily apply by tzad then?
Correct. Right. So that's not necessarily limited to tzad. It could certainly be extrapolated to other things when you have that. So for example, the Chemda Shlomo says that if you have a situation where there's a mitzvah involved, right, then you could also say that the kavana for the mitzvah is the overwhelming priority, and that will also, let's say you have two actions where one maisa is heter and one is a malacha, and the heter is also a mitzvah. So then there's again a svara to say that the mitzvah will give, will get prominence. So again, it does limit the Rashba. It doesn't apply to everything. It's only going to apply to a situation where your actual, for example, to go back to what we said about opening the window with the sunlight, it wouldn't necessarily correlate to that. It's only when the maisa heter that you're doing has some aspect to it that makes it so obviously necessary. So for example, the Chassam Sofer, when he talks about this in his Kedushim to Sukkah and Daf and Gimel, on the Gemara about the Hadassah, Yishlam HaShan HaCharisi, he talks about the same Svara. So there he has it, you know, Bitmiya. What do you want? The guy's going to be mafkir his chafetz, and the guy's going to decide all his property is open for anyone to take? It's such a ludicrous possibility that that becomes the dominant model here. So that would limit the Rashba, it wouldn't limit it only to Tzeda, but would limit it to cases where you have some type of overwhelming, let's call it an anansadi, some type of overwhelmingly self-evident factor that makes it necessary. So in the case of the Rashba, the fact that you can't leave your house exposed, in the case the Chemda Shlomo also throws out, if there's a mitzvah involved, something else that makes the Maisa Heter the clear priority, then the Rashba Svara may apply.
We would have to put on the Milo.
So then again, also,
but the Gemara says that
right. So then actually the Chemda Shlomo that they add the some sort that gets into this into why the Gemara then has to say that. You know, so there you have a mitzvah correlation. So he kind of talks about that, about how to make that make sense. No.
Maybe you can say that from the aspect of being unique to say that even if he did trap it, even if he had kavana to trap it, that when he comes back, he might decide he doesn't want to go through a shachting and let it go. So then it would sort of turn into malachas and into chalagufa because he, after the fact, retroactively decided he wasn't going to go through with the post-Tzeda process.
Well, Tzeda isn't necessarily only for shechting purposes, although we got into that a little bit. We talked about Melachshin Shechel Gufa. But in general, in terms of Kavana, so it seems to be a rule across the board that Kavana is defined when you do it. What it turns out later is not going to be relevant. So if he had Kavana at the time, because he wants to hold on to this deer, whether it's shechting or whatever it is, but he wants to hold on to this deer, so that's all that's going to be relevant. According to the Rashba, it won't matter. According to the Rana, it won't matter in the other direction. According to the Shulchan Gibarim, it may matter. But to the extent Kavana matters, it'll matter at the time. It's not going to matter.
There was a time that though in the Machlokas for Reb Zio with Kuskan and Rashash.
Right, the Katz Kuzri has its own unique attributes to it. And it's also a more local conversation with Rita for a number of reasons. But here to say that this, at the time, you're doing Sod now. The only question is it affected by something later? So that's, especially, there's no real reason to say that in the case of Sod. So it's not going to really come up. The unique aspect of Tzad is that the action that you're doing that is itself trapping the animal is only called Tzad because you want to take the animal. Not because of what you want to do with it later, because right now you want to take the animal. So that's another approach. So what do we see so far? Then two approaches in the Rashba, either because the actions are not always linked, or because, especially here, there's an overwhelming self-evident factor that makes the Maisa Heter the dominant suggestion. If this is true, by the way, it could also come up that this could affect the whole Davar Sheino Miskaven model. So maybe the Rashba would say that anytime you have a Davar Sheino Miskaven, but if the two actions are unequal in some subjective way, you'll have to figure out what makes them unequal, where exactly the line is drawn. But then maybe you'd have to say that any kind of normal Davar Sheino Miskaven, if there is a clear, overwhelming focus on one part of the equation, maybe that would take away from the psychological component. So that's a pretty big fish. So it limits the Rashba, but also potentially expands the Rashba in a very significant way. What else could we say? Any other stories on why the Rashba's case might be different than a general Davar Sheino Miskaven anyway? So there are many who suggest, such as the Avnei Nezer, that there is a difference here, that you are not doing anything specifically to the object. This is formulated in a number of different ways, but, and it may also reflect a quirk within Seder, but you're not doing anything to the deer. You're acting on your house. You're locking your house. Happens to be that the house also will contain a deer, so therefore it'll add up to Seder. But the lack of direct connection to an object is also significant, perhaps. And maybe that's a unique element here, that when there is no direct, visible link, you're not acting on an object itself, you're just impacting it secondarily, maybe that's why there's a difference here. This, by the way, is also invoked in the sunlight discussion, that some of those who are more makel about opening the window when there's a plant in the house are also makel for this reason, because they see there's no visible connection between the sunlight and the plant. It's not like you're watering the plant. It's not like you're doing any physical act onto the plant. You're opening your window. The plant is in the room. There's no visible link between the plant and the window. So there are those who are makel for that reason, and they connect it to the Rashba. They understand the Rashba is saying something similar, that you're not essentially acting on the Tzvi. The Tzvi happens to essentially be brought into the picture, but you're not doing anything physically to the Tzvi, which may especially be a quirk of Seid. Although Seid theoretically also, if I jump on an animal and throw a net over its head, I'm more clearly acting on the animal, while if I happen to lock a door and the animal is in the building, then it's not as clear a connection, and maybe that's a role here. So again, how does that apply? How does that transport to other things? So it's not limited to Tzeda. We just mentioned the example in terms of sunlight. But it will also focus this in a certain way, which may not apply to all cases. And was it Dani had an observation?
Yeah, what's the difference between that and Grama?
It could be that's connected to Grama. So actually, the Chelkas Yoav, who was a Talmud of the Avnei Nezer, the Chelkas Yoav says a specific star like that, where he says also, it's a quirk of Tzeda, that Tzeda really is a Grama always. But the Chiddush of Tzeda is that even though it's a Grama, so it's still a Malacha. But if you have this double effect thing going on or something like that, so then that'll be a quirk. So essentially, he's understanding that Tzeda itself is a Chiddush. Like we'll see something similar when we talk about the Zoreh, you know, that there is itself an inherent flaw in the way Tzeda works, because it's often done through Grama. But nonetheless, it's a malacha, so it must override a grama consideration. But here, you have this added element, and you have a heter going on at the same time, so that's going to affect it.
So is that related to Tzeda again? Because it's...
So it's uniquely relevant to say that. Does it have to be limited? No, you could probably make other examples, but Tachalkes Yoav's formulation specifically brings it into a Tzeda connection. That the lack of direct relationship, you could phrase it more abstractly and say that anytime they're not acting on the object itself, it's not automatically obsegratia. Or you could say that Tzeda has this element by its very nature, and the fact that you're ever a chayav for it is a chiddush, and here we're bringing things back to normal. So you could phrase it in a way that limits it to Tzeda more.
Does Abinazar take it directly with regard to Brahma, or more that Tzeda is unique in that?
That's the Chalk Ziyo's point.
You can split hairs between the Brahma part and the fact that you're not acting directly on the object, and the fact that Tzeda you're never changing the object with Tzeda. You trap a bird in the house, the bird's not changed, when you plant something or you chef something or all these other things. You're actually doing something to the object here. You're imposing a reality on the object.
Right, so that the Tzeda has a unique element to it, which may separate it from all other malachas. So the Chalkes Yoav focuses on that more. The Abinazar understands the issue of the Rashba more generally, and that's what we just said, that there are essentially two forms of the Svar, one that sees it as applicable to everything, and one that particularly focuses on a quirk of Tzeda, which has
a unique element. It's focusing on the Grama part of it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be the more universal part?
No, because saying that Tzeda should always be flawed by its grubba nature, except the fact that it's a malacha, then puts it on the table. And then once you have this quirk, so then that may put it back to its normal category where it's more
grubba. So any
grubba? Other malacha, right, anything that's already a grubba, but most other malachas are not, by their very nature, a grubba. If we get into Tzeda, we'll get this a little bit more. There are those who also bring Tzeda. Jonathan just mentioned the whole Zoreya question, that maybe the same way Zoreya has an inherent disconnect because it always takes time in order for the seed to take root. Some put Tzeda in a very similar category. And Tzeda also has an inherent indirectness that's built into it. Hi.
But isn't this, in terms of, say, the examples that we were something more, this is sort of an exception? Because most of them we saw, the river with the fish and the fish nets, that's clearly more direct, or trapping the snake in their basket. Isn't this an exception to Tzeda? This is not the general Tzeda that...
I mean, it's theoretically possible to have a Tzeda which is more direct.
Right.
Rather, if you jump on an animal with a net, it's more direct.
Isn't that the norm though?
So that's the question, what's the norm? See, I could certainly make a model of Tzeda where you're acting very directly on the animal, but you could also make many models where you aren't. So the fact that there are so many different permutations is itself a raya that this is a malacha which is less action-based than all the other malachas. All other malachas will generally have one direct surah, while Tzad seems to have 10 different models, some of which act directly on the animal, some of which act less directly, and they all end up being the same thing. So how could that be? So it seems to say that Tzeda is uniquely result-focused. Everything else is more action-focused, even perhaps Zoreya, which has got its own quirk. And Sad, maybe out of all the 39 malachos, more results oriented about getting this animal somehow, however you do it. Whether you do it by jumping on him, whether you do it by closing your door, whether you do it by setting a net and coming back an hour later, which is also a whole different level. So that's that may be a quirk by Tzeda. So let's try to at least get one more svara out, and we'll continue with other topics tomorrow. So another possibility that's suggested by the Shuvas Meshuv Ba'alacha, that maybe the unique quirk here is that normally a psikreisha davar shein meskaven is you do action A, which is a maisa hetter, and it brings about action B, which is a malacha. Here, what you're causing, the action B, is itself mixed in with hetter. Maybe that's a little bit unusual. That normally you do a hector that causes a malacha. Here, the very action that is itself a malacha is itself a maisa hector. Locking your door is not any malacha per se. And that is now intertwined with the part that is the malacha. So that takes over. So that becomes the dominant. So that's, again, just a way of perhaps formulating in a sense, that might be the most modest way of reading the Rashba, in that it doesn't really expand the scope or reduce the scope so much. It's pretty much a straightforward attempt to try to just say, what is the Rashba saying that's different about this than any normal Dabrashin and Miskavi? Hi.
I'm not sure I understand that.
They say that normally if I do a Davar Sheino Misgaven, so I do one action, right? So I open the fridge and the light goes on.
First of all,
right? So the Maisa Hetu, I open the fridge, and the Malacha was I now provoke the light.
Then the whole thing happened with segregation, and I killed the chicken and the cat.
Correct.
In the opposite direction.
Right, because you're starting off with the Maisa, well, you're starting off with the Maisa Yisr itself.
Right.
Right. So, in a Hanami, but the point is it doesn't, it's a question on the model more than it's a question on this suggestion.
Even on the model, you can identify any mice as a mice head. Like, you're just cutting, so it happens you're cutting off the head.
Right.
Like, you're closing
it.
You're
double effect, that your intention of cutting, if it were not for the fact that it kills, if you could remove the head of an animal, see, it also gets into the question of how death takes place. If you could remove the head of an animal without killing it, right, so it wouldn't necessarily be any law. So if you're just taking off the head of an animal, and that didn't have to result in death, so that could have been a mice ahead. It's because death will ensue, and if we view that as something that happens later, so then you cause that death, you're going to have to second later, but you cause that death through your actions, so your mice ahead was taken off the head for the boy, and the ensuing death, which was also your responsibility, was the malacha that happened that you caused.
So how that different, even though the mice enter is locked in the door, there's nothing wrong with that. But
right.
In this case, that's
right, but here, what is the malacha upside in this case? The locking of the door. The locking of the door is a maisa hetter. You're doing that in order to protect your stuff.
Yeah, that's almost like the other svar that said that this maisa is more defined according to the more important task. You assume that?
No, because it doesn't require that the maisa hetter have some overwhelming bias towards it.
Yeah, but if it doesn't, then it might have different integration.
Because in the case of segregation, so that part of the killing the animal, that doesn't have any hetter with it. That's a result. The death of the animal is a result of what you did. So the killing of the animal, there's no hetter aspect of killing the animal on Shabbos.
So you think vertical is for that.
Right, essentially. It's not a good way to put it. So all of this impacts on how the Rashba is applied by halacha. If the Rashba is applied by halacha. So there are many who don't accept the Rashba at all. There's a lot of literature about that. Many posts who don't accept the Rashba. There are those who do accept the Shulta Gibar, as we mentioned before. Magen Avraham has a funny lashon. Magen Avraham says, if that's the Rashba, ein lahakel kol kach. One shouldn't be that makel. So what does it mean? It sounds like he's not thrilled about the Rashba, but that he feels there are tzadikim. So Harfinus, for example, who has a tshuva where he goes through a lot of the positions that we mentioned. So if Harfinus' understanding is that in general the Rashba is not really accepted, but when there are other sniffim, when there are other points to be makel, sometimes the Rashba will be invoked. So for example, the Shulta Gibar himself is a way of saying that once we're somewhere in the middle, we might accept the Rashba and not accept them all the way. And all the different svaras that we mentioned just now also open up other avenues, which may be, for example, so maybe I wouldn't accept the Rashba in general, but I'll accept it in a Chem de Shlomo way. So I'll accept it if there is an overwhelming bias towards the Maisa Heter, like in a specific case, or a mitzvah, I'll accept it, but I won't accept the formulation that says any dual intent is mutter. So the posts are all over the map in terms of how to take this Rashba, in terms of how to whether to accept him or not. And if you accept him, how do you understand what he's saying? Or is it that you're accepting him a little bit, that when he's thrown in with other factors, you will be makel? So again, I'll let you go to a second, just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we focused on this question of, should we say that if the maisa doesn't always have to be connected with a malacha, it's not a psik resha? Seems to be Rashi's view, although we saw two different ways to read Rashi. It's the way the Makevitz and Mishnah understood the Rambam, and it might be what the Rashba is saying. So we saw these three views. The Rashba, you're allowed to close the door and trap a deer even if you want to. The Ran, you're not allowed to close the door even if you don't want to trap the deer. And the Shulta Gibar, you can close the door at least if you're not focused on trapping the deer. So we talked about different possible applications and the basic question of what differs the Rashba's case from any Davrish and a Miskave. So we saw at least four ways of looking at it, either because of what we've been saying till now, it's not always linked. possibility that maybe tzad requires special kavanah because its whole nature is that you have to want the animal in order for it to be tzad. That was one possibility. Second possibility, and that there's an overwhelming bias to the heter because the case involves abandoning all your stuff, or possibly a mitzvah case would be similar. The third svar of the Avinader and the Chalkas Yoav, that you're not doing anything in the object itself. There's no direct link between the object and your action. Or the fourth possibility, that here the act that ends up being the malacha is also tied in with the Maisa Heter. That's perhaps a unique model. And again, so therefore how you apply this halacha, if you accept the Rashba, is a very diverse question. The Magen Avraham saying Kol Kach, apparently saying he's not thrilled about the Rashba, but there's some window for it sometimes to play a role, and that's a big issue the post can take into consideration. You should have a meaningful day. That's the Shabbat tomorrow. We'll try to turn into that verse and try to continue to contain it.
All those.